Our next speaker is Marine Lieutenant Colonel Paul Danfus. He is going to brief us concerning the National Security Space Office's interim report on space-based solar power. He is a Marine Operations Officer. He currently serves as Chief Engineer for the Communication Function Integration Office of NSSO. And he's the real deal when it comes to warfighting. He has several hundred hours of combat experience in helicopters, and he has just returned, February returned from Iraq, where he was in charge of the daily planning and execution of all Marine aircraft operations in that country. He also holds a master's degree in aeronautical engineering and has an ambition of becoming an astronaut. Colonel?
Thank you. I did just have one correction. I have a master's in astronautical engineering. I figured that's so rare that I should probably point that out. I'm one of the very few space-trained Marines in the Marine Corps, what we call our space cadre. And like Mark says, I like to bring an operational sense to some of the projects that we work on. You can go on to the next slide. Thank you. Well, I'm pleased to announce that we're going to release, or we have released, our six-month study on space-based solar power from the National Security Space Office. And I just want to start by giving you a little bit of background on how this study came to be. As John Mankins mentioned, the technology has increased vastly in the last 12 years. But with that, so has our security situation and our economic situation has changed quite a bit as well. I would be remiss if I didn't point out that Colonel Coyote Smith is really the impetus behind this effort. He came to the leadership at NSSO and said the time is right to look at space-based solar power again. The leadership was immediately aware that this was a good thing to go and look at, but in the position that we were in, we weren't able to fund it. So they said, Coyote, go ahead. Go off and do great things, but you don't have any funding to do that. So Coyote, being an innovative guy that he is, looked at different ways that he could collaborate with the people out there who have an interest in this. And he turned to the internet. He turned to setting up some news groups, chat rooms, blogs on the internet to generate interest in this. And it was all done on the cheap, basically for free and pro bono time on basically everybody who participated in this. So from that, we set up two different websites. One of them public, which was assisted by the National Space Frontier Foundation, which was open to the public and people could chime in, talk on the blogs. And then there was a separate one that was done through Google, and that one was invite only, and that was for the specialists in the field. Now, with that particular blog, we broke it out into four separate groups that I'll talk about here in just a minute. But the overall effort looked at the literature that was out there, it looked at the studies that were out there, looked at the changes that had happened, and made that as a starting point for the new effort. We also participated in multiple events, participated in multiple conferences, socialized the idea, generated a lot of interest. Coyote told me that he thought he was going to get 12 or 15 people to be involved in this. At this time, we have over 170 people and tens of thousands of hits on both of the websites. So there's been generated quite a bit of interest in this. And of course, you know, the internet collaboration was the first time that something like that had been done. Now this study, next slide, this study was taken on under the context of how can space-based solar power help us in the 21st century in a strategic security sense? How can it help us prevent conflicts over limited resources, expanding populations, rising prices in petroleum, oil? How could space-based solar power affect us? And essentially, how can the United States and its partners enable the development and deployment of space-based solar power within the first half of the 21st century such that, if constructed, it could provide affordable, clean, safe, reliable, sustainable, expandable, and essentially inexhaustible energy for our consumers? Now, as I said, the study was broken down into the four areas you see here: science and technology, policy and legal, logistics infrastructure, and the business case. And we took the experts in each one of those fields and we made them the leaders of each one of those breakout sessions. And that way we could focus the individuals on the particular area of their expertise. And you'll see that in the report, that there are findings broken out in each one of those areas. Now, I just want to talk today about the overarching findings and theme of the entire report. Overall, very, very positive feeling towards space-based solar power as a national security asset. The first overarching finding was that space-based solar power, it does present a strategic opportunity for us in the 21st century. It can advance our U.S. and partner security, capability, freedom of action, and merits significant further study and demonstration on the part of the United States, so we can help either the United States develop this or allow the commercial sector to step in. And again, what we're advocating is continued studies and demonstrations on this. The second finding, while challenges do remain and the business case does not necessarily close at this time on a pure financial sense, space solar power is closer than ever, and we are the day after next from being able to actually do this. There are no technology hurdles that are showstoppers right now, but that business case still needs to close. So what we are advocating is a government-led proof-of-concept program. Now, that proof-of-concept would have to start in very small incremental steps and move up to a very large-scale demonstrator. So what we're talking about is, just on the wireless power side, being able to transmit power from a terrestrial base to a terrestrial base, say maybe over this course of 200 nautical miles. Then we would take that demonstration, take it on orbit from spacecraft to spacecraft. The next step would then be to demonstrate that we can beam power from low Earth orbit to a station on the ground and provide an appreciable amount of power. And then that would ultimately lead to a 5 to 10 megawatt demonstrator in GEO that could provide sustainable power to the ground. Now, somebody quoted to me last week that said, if you show that you can bring power down from orbit, and if you can power something on the ground, the money will flow, the business case will flow. And I think that's very, very true. Now, there's other technologies we still need to pursue, and that's the continuation of learning how to construct large structures in space. This is going to require a very, very large architecture, and whether that be manned or robotic, still some progress that needs to be made there and some demonstration that can be done. As John mentioned, there's been very, very many advances in solar cell technology. We continue on the vector that we're on. I think that we'll be able to generate a large structure that can provide an appreciable amount of power. And finally, just like many, many space programs that are in work or envisioned right now, reusable launch vehicles. Reusable launch vehicles are the key to get the price of a pound or a kilogram of payload to orbit. Our third finding is that space solar power requires a coordinated national program with high-level leadership and resourcing to enable this paradigm-shifting technology. We feel that this should be on the level of our fusion efforts or the efforts to build and operate the International Space Station. This is something that obviously the payoff is large enough that it can require this high level of leadership. The last overarching finding was, should the U.S. begin a coordinated national program, it should expect to find broad interest, and I think that we've shown that today. Broad interest applies across the commercial sector, it provides across the entrepreneurial sector, the large aerospace companies, and other countries. Japan, Canada, India, China, Russia, and the EU have all shown interest in this. And it should be noted that if the United States decides not to move out on this, or if we move out slowly on this, that we may end up getting passed. There are other countries out there that want to pursue this technology. Now, the scope of this study was fairly broad, did not go too far in depth into any one of the areas. That's why we're advocating for further studies. So there are very many questions that we were not able to answer in the scope of this study, but we hope that follow-on studies will be able to target. And that's the identification of clear targets for economic viability and markets. We've identified that if we can make this happen, the business case will close. Well, how do we get there? We need to identify those mid-range targets. The technology development goals. I've talked on some of the demonstrators. Some of those goals need to be developed, and the roadmap as to how we get there. Selection of the best design trades, That should be another follow-on study, is to take the trade space, which is fairly large right now, and narrow it down so we can determine what this architecture is going to look like. And again, as I've been indicating today, demonstrators are the key here. If we can demonstrate this, the business case will close rapidly. We came away with four overarching study recommendations, and you'll see those in the executive summary and very much expanded upon in the report itself. The first is that we feel the U.S. government should effectively organize to allow for the development of space solar power and conclude analysis to resolve the remaining unknowns. We feel that the United States government should support the alliance that was announced this morning. The United States government, while this doesn't fall in anyone's particular lane, needs to identify a leader who is going to champion this, whether it falls into NASA's lane, Department of Energy. And it should be noted that DOD, although we are a participant in this study, we do not necessarily want to be a developer of this technology. We want to be an early user, and we feel that we can be a catalyst to make this technology advance. But this is not necessarily in the DOD's lane. The second recommendation is the government should help to retire a major portion of the risk for business development. If the United States government can show that this capability can be demonstrated and study this capability further, it will help to retire that risk that the business community is necessarily adverse to. I've talked with several folks who are very smart on venture capitalists. Venture capitalists would like to invest in something like this, but the numbers are too high and the time frames are a little too long. So if we can retire that risk and bring down those overall costs. Venture capitalists like to work in the order of chunks of tens of millions of dollars, not necessarily in hundreds of millions of dollars. So if we can get some of the technologies down to that area where we can show a benefit in a matter of years and for tens of millions of dollars, the business community will step in. The third recommendation is the U.S. government should facilitate a policy, regulatory, and legal environment for the development of space solar power, that in the form of tax breaks and incentives for early adopters. And again, as the DOD steps in, that will help to advance the technology. And the final recommendation is that the government should become an early adopter of a demonstration and a customer of space-based solar power. I think it was mentioned earlier, talking about in Iraq. I can tell you firsthand that power is an issue in Iraq. The Iraqis were generous enough to donate us several bases that we took over, but the power is not necessarily clean over there. And there are still pockets of areas where we are operating off of generators. And for those generators, it takes a long logistics trail to get a gallon of gasoline in to power those generators. If we have the ability to beam power to a forward area in the future, that helps to alleviate some of that logistics trail that we have. The report, as you see here, is available on the website. That's spacesolarpower.wordpress.com. That's the Space Frontier public website for space solar power. That entire report should be hung on there. And again, I want to recognize Colonel Mike Coyote Smith for starting this effort. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to be here to reap the fruits of his effort. He's in England right now earning his PhD. He just started about 3-4 weeks ago. I also want to recognize Colonel Mike Hornacek and Lieutenant Colonel Pete Gerritsen, two Air Force officers who did a vast majority of the integration and the writing of the final report. I think someone had commented with masterpiece, and that's something that's not necessarily thrown out all the time. So those gentlemen did a fantastic job. Also want to thank John Mankins and Charles Miller for helping to facilitate the overall effort, Jim Muncy for helping to set up some of the political inroads that helped to make this study more robust. And then the many, many others. There were several people that applied very, 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 very thoughtful and insightful input to the overall report. And I think that you'll see the depth of this report is substantial. Thank you.